take a minute to check your social battery. How's it doing? It's easy to ignore our needs and spread ourselves too thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/popcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/popcastpod.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your ginger fireball, raw juice blend of 2017 of music news and criticism. I'm your host, a mildly ailing John Caramonica.
Black saints and a lady playing knock off soul. A punk rock romantic slumped on the kitchen floor. Nuns in stress positions smoking marble rolls. Lolita is weeping, the bride is beautiful. My seduction.
Taking a bunch of oil of oregano to clean the system out because today's podcast was far too important to miss. It is the Albums of the Year podcast. We got the whole squad here. I've got Chief Pop Music Critic John Perellis.
Hey there.
And JP, before we continue, we opened on a song from your number one album, and that was St. Vincent's Mass Seduction.
That was the
title track.
Not Mass Education, as a lot of people think it's called, because or, it really looks like it's called that.
Or Miseducation, right, for that matter. To round out the conversation, I've got pop music reporter Joe Coscarelli.
Not a critic. No,
no opinions. Opinion-free.
He has no opinions.
Only provocations. Yes. No
questions.
Opinions.
I have questions.
Yeah, I'm super pumped.
I'm a fan of music in addition to being a music reporter.
Is that right?
I keep that separate.
I did not know that.
I'm compartmentalizing.
I was actually unaware of that until today. Yeah. And we also have, also ailing today, pop music editor Karen Gans.
And if you're minorly ailing, I'm majorly ailing.
Karen's got laryngitis.
Hello.
Karen's steroided up, but it's not, it hasn't gotten to 100% yet.
I promise not to torture your ears. I'm going to literally sip tea.
I actually thought your voice was actually just an argument in favor of the new minimalism. I thought it's a metaphor, right?
I'm like, don't make me laugh. It hurts.
Okay. Well, you're on the wrong podcast.
Oh, no.
There's nothing but humorous bars
but
on the
yucks.
Podcast. Okay. So, JP, both you and I had best album lists.
Yeah, yours has 25 on it. Mine has 10. What is with this? This is like the 10 quarter football game.
We're digital
first. This is the 23 inning baseball
game.
Can
I tell you? But there's an actual answer to that question, and it's not because I was trying to stunt or flex, although it is a stunt and a flex.
Some are only online, right? Some are.
I actually have not seen the print edition.
It's right.
What has been excised from print? Joe, will you open up the early copy of the print edition?
Yeah, so I see John Perellis with 10 albums and a list of songs that is not numbered. And then I see John Caramonica with 10 albums. And 15 albums.
Okay.
Sorry. And 10 songs that are numbered.
Apologies.
But you stuck some multiple songs in some
I
of
did.
Your numbers. So
I,
really no one's following a, the rules here.
I grill Marcus did this
yes.
year. I'm sorry. And apologies to SOB, RBE, who are number 16.
Right.
Or 17 or whatever. Yeah. So, but there's an answer to that, JP.
Okay.
And I think we, in a conversation we had a couple weeks ago, I think we sort of alluded to this. I felt like this was not really much of a consensus year.
No, absolutely.
And so I think in a year where the albums were like much more clearly like, yo, this is the album, this is Yeezus. It in a year with those kind of records, I maybe would have said, stop at 10 or stop at 12 or 15 or whatever. But in a year where there was less of that, and I felt like the records that I was most attracted to were occupying maybe a less central space, I felt an impulse to give more shine across a broader spectrum. That's how I felt. You may think that's a trash opinion, but that was my take.
No, I'm just a formalist. I mean, yeah. Top 10 list, 10 albums. I mean,
all right.
True.
Davey's cursing under his breath.
I said, do as many as you want.
Karen said I could.
Blank check.
But as far as consensus goes, you guys did have some overlap.
Yeah. So, JP, why don't you read your albums list real quick, and then I'll read my albums list, although mine will take more than twice as long.
Okay. On my top 10 list were St. Vincent, Moses Sumney, Residente, Julian Baker, Bjork, Kendrick Lamar, Lorde, SZA, Valerie June, and Vince Staples.
Okay, now everybody get a coffee, because I'm going on my list. Nothing Nowhere was number one. Then SZA, Mount Erie, Hey Violet, Taylor Swift.
Who?
Taylor Swift.
The old Taylor or the new Taylor?
Taylor Swift.
Good enough.
Naya, Ozuna, J. Cole, Julian Baker, Lorde. Then we're going to the spread out part of the list.
Director's
cut. Expansion team.
Yes. Yeah. Boiler House Remix. Aminé, 21 Savage, Drake, Kendrick, J. Huss. Into Jidenna, SOBRBE, Kelsey Ballerini, Young Boy Never Broke Again, a.k.a. FKA, NBA Young Boy. Future, Jay-Z. Samantha Fish. Downtown Boys, Fifth Harmony. And of course, you know, I had that Thought Breaker by Chief Keef at number 25. Shouts to all my internet
Which
friends.
Future album?
Future.
Is it 2018 yet?
Savage.
It's 2016 based on that J. Cole pick.
Okay. So the J. Cole in my just as a technical thing.
Fair.
That's the Beyonce rule and the Chief Keef rule. If it comes out and I cannot listen to it until after the list is printed in the previous year, I feel like it counts. And that was true of Chief Keef's Finally Rich and Beyonce's Beyonce. Yes. So as far as I'm concerned, from December 7th onward,
New Year.
Open season. Now, I think for many reasons, I'm standing out here alone with that J. Cole record.
Except
the fact that it came out in 2016 being the least among them. But let's listen to a song from my number one album. That would be Nothing Nowhere's Reaper. Let's listen to Clarity in Kerosene.
Finding clarity in kerosene, incinerating all these memories. I haven't spoke to you since 17. Just thought I'd let you know you're dead to me. You found yourself in drugs and nicotine. A hollow body like a figurine. I always felt like an accessory. There's love and hate, but this was in between.
Okay, so we'll spend a little bit of time with Nothing Nowhere later on, but JP, let's talk a little bit about, I think you and I had a lot in common this
year. Strangely enough.
Which is not a thing that always happens. And I think we should probably talk about which albums we had in common and kind of what those albums have in common. Because I do think there's some threads running through those albums. So we both have SZA on our list. We both have Lorde on our list. We both have Kendrick. Kendrick is on my extended list, but we both have Kendrick. And then we both have Julian Baker on our list. I see some commonalities there. JP,
you go first.
Okay. So I see three women who are anti-pop pop stars of a sort. I see Lorde, who made what I thought was maybe the most provocative mainstream pop album of the year.
if you don't count the St. Vincent album, but that's...
Which I do not.
I barely count the Lorde album based on how it was received by the pop world.
Crickets. Crickets out here.
But
for
now,
Ella.
In Album of the Year season, it's on every list and obviously nominated for Album of the Year at the
Grammys.
And
I sort of wonder, like, when I look at a lot of people's lists, not a lot of people's or a lot of entities' lists, like, every, you know, if there's something obligatory, it's like, oh, a famous person put out record, it's
here
the
it
number
is.
Seven, yeah. It's the number nine, whatever. I do feel a lot of people quietly like this Lorde record, but I do not necessarily believe that, like, America enjoyed this Lorde record. SZA, maybe an R&B Lorde album, kind of.
Very specific in a similar way, I think.
Yeah.
Like, in
totally
the songwriting
agree.
And
well,
the storytelling.
Well, also, here's what holds all these together. They're all wounded, paranoid,
yes.
unhappy albums. They're mm-hmm. all people like spelling out their worst insecurities.
For a wounded, paranoid, unhappy year. So not surprised that both you and I gravitated to records like that this year.
Music critics.
Yeah. I need friends. JP, talk to us. Talk about Julian Baker, because I really like the Julian Baker record. I love the first single from this record. Should we listen to Appointments?
Sounds good.
I'm staying in tonight. I won't stop you from leaving. I know that I'm not what you wanted. Am I wanted some?
Was Appointments, and you're probably crying right now, and I'm sorry to have done that to you. Julian Baker, this is the second Julian Baker record. I'm not totally convinced I like this record more than the first Julian Baker record.
Well, it was hard for her because the first one is totally, she's nobody. She's recording in some studio in Middle Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
She's exposing herself completely. It's that fresh out of the egg, the baby chick blinking in the sunlight. And this one, she's got an audience, she's got listeners, she knows she's going to be heard.
Money for the studio.
Yep.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, it's Arden Studios in Memphis. It's a good studio, but it's not. It's not everything.
She's not out there with Max Martin.
Yeah. But the self-consciousness of knowing you're going to be heard weighs on a lot of musicians. Mm-hmm. And I think this album, the sounds are a little bit prettier, but she's not vastly expanding her vocabulary.
When you talked to her, because you interviewed her, did she talk about that pressure weighing on her?
Yeah, she did. And she was suddenly thinking, I'm singing to all these people. What do I want to say to them? And what she said was she wanted to, the first album's almost suicidal in its way. It's admitting to suicidal thoughts.
Yep.
This one, she's looking for a way out. She's looking to, I mean, there's still some pretty dark, dark, dark songs on this album. But she's looking for a way to survive the self-destructive things that she had on the first one.
Also, the religious imagery on this record, I think, is, I know it's something that she sort of has dabbled with or sort of worked around in the past, but I was very struck with the overlap of the religiosity with the kind of emotional content. And that's something that I often maybe kind of back away from. There's something that feels, I don't want to say trite, but a little bit... It's a little bit easy, but I feel like the way that she seems to be reckoning with her own self-doubt and the sort of doubt of religious belief or doubting, you know, religious doubt, the way that she weaves those two things together, I find really, really striking.
We had a long sidebar about Calvinism.
As you do. Me and Lil Pump did, too. Yeah.
I think the thing with her, though, is it's not just a literary device, right?
No,
it's biographical.
It's what she grew up in. I mean, that's... And the Calvinism she was talking about was the Calvinism that believes we're all born bad. And this is something she's really struggled with. And she told me she's found a new pastor who kind of challenges the idea that we're all born bad. And so that's why she's grappling with it. I mean, there's a song called Televangelist. She's trying to figure out what's performance and what's real, which is something that every tiny indie artist suddenly finding an audience has to figure out.
Another album that we both had is the SZA record. Let's listen to The Weeknd from SZA's Control. So the variant of kind of what we're talking about, SZA's variant of what we're talking about, is a record of kind of like very profound sexual agency. I feel like 2017 was a year where women singing and rapping about sex in a very frank way was probably at its peak, or at least in recent years.
Wait, next year. More so.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, whether it's Cardi or Jessie Reyes, Taylor Swift finally acknowledging things like this, but it's entering the conversation in a real way. What I like so much about SZA's record is the kind of it's not even impressionistic detail; it's actual detail about relationships gone awry. She writes as if she's talking, and I feel like the casualness of that approach, mixed with this production, which is not sort of beating you over the head production.
No, it's very subtle.
I think it's an incredible pairing of subject and sound.
You feel like you're having a private conversation with her, which is something easier to do in the recording studio than it is to do on a stage.
Yeah.
A lot of these songs, the drums don't even show up till partway through. I mean, it's not like this isn't headed for the club. This is definitely in your bedroom in many ways. you know,
hey,
in your bedroom wondering what's going on. But also, I mean, I listen to this and I think I am so glad I'm not single.
or a millennial.
Or a millennial. It's like so much you have to figure out. You have to figure out, you know, online dating. You have to figure out who's ghosting you. You have to figure out all this stuff. It's like,
true story.
I'm glad I'm done with this.
CF, Jacob Sartorius Hit Me Back, yes, featuring Black Bear.
Yes.
Also, I feel like SZA, this is a pretty good year for R&B, which is actually not a thing that I think you could have said in the last 3 or 4
yeah,
years.
Surprisingly.
Yeah, I mean, Samford Records pretty good, but it was sort of a good year for R&B, and I think R&B has kind of had an identity crisis.
Kalela, Miguel's new album.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some stuff.
You know, R&B's been struggling because of hip-hop kind of usurping its ideas and its sounds. I think R&B's sort of like finally recapturing a little bit of its own imagination, finding a lane that's not dependent upon hip hop.
And so in semi R&B, like did you consider the Khalid album for your list?
I did.
I knew you liked it when it
came
out.
Yeah, I did. I think when I revisited it, it felt a little thin to me, but I really did like that record when it came out.
It's a
out.
Debut. I mean, I feel like
yeah,
he has
I feel like there's one like it's kind of like one idea, and it maybe didn't hold up as much for me as I would have liked. But I think he has a really interesting voice, and I actually like the thing that was interesting to me about Khalid was Khalid's R&B sounds like 1984 pop music, and I think that's an influence point that pop star, like traditional pop stars have, but you don't often hear it with a voice like Khalid's. So I was really interested in that hybrid that he was making. But the record on the whole, it was probably in my top 50, but not my top 25.
Next year, you're going to do 50.
I was going to say, John told me a little bit about his process when chasing him for his copy. Mm. And I'm told it begins with a 75.
Oh, yeah, even more.
Oh, yeah. You do a long list.
I do. Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about process
for
a second?
Yeah, I'd like to hear it. Jamie says no.
No. Okay, well, I'll talk about process.
Trade secrets.
So what I do is I go through everything I've written for the year. I just sort of pull out albums and songs that I think would be interesting or that I knew that I liked. I'll go through everything you wrote, JP, for the year, or new, like everything we've covered for anything that I maybe didn't. Like, I didn't write about SZA this year, but like, obviously, I liked it. I'll poke around if other people have, you know, you want to look and see if you've missed any really obvious stuff. So you poke around online, and then I will listen to every single album that I put on that long list. Maybe not top to bottom, but at least, you know, 30 seconds to a minute of every song. And then I'll winnow that list down to 40 or 30 or 20 or whatever it is. This year, I got the long list of 80 down to about 40. Khalid was in that 40, and then I winnowed that 40 down to 25, and that took many days. As
I'm
Karen,
keep this in mind when I'm constructing the deadlines for next year.
Let me ask you guys this. How much do you consider replay value? Because obviously you guys have to listen to a ton of music for your jobs. Like, how much is it, like, this album came out in January and I was still listening to it in my free time in November?
Free time?
Yeah.
Don't understand that concept.
I mean, do you have, is replay value a factor, basically?
Well, what is a
factor? Or is it just that it stuck with you emotionally?
What is a factor is when you go back to listen to it for the end of the year and you realize, I haven't heard this album in 8 months and I remember every song.
Yeah, the way that certain songs affix themselves in your brain. That to me, because replay value is also, it sort of, in a weird way, privileges records that you had 10 months to feel that way about.
Sure, totally.
And not records that you had a month to feel that way about. But like, for example, when I went and listened to the Naya record again, I was surprised. I was like, oh yeah, like basically every song on this knocks.
Right.
And I hadn't really listened to it very much in the month since, but I'm going to make y'all listen to it now. So here is Hurt You First by Naya. So I think this was a good example of a record that doesn't feel particularly contemporary. It doesn't feel like it's part of a larger argument. It doesn't feel like it's part of a larger movement. But the songs are really well executed. And when I revisited the record, I just was consistently blown away with, like, not only did I remember the songs, but the structures felt like they had woven their way into me. And so I would rather privilege an album like this than an album like Khalid, which I heard everywhere.
Right.
And I also know most of the words to the songs, but on a sort of structural and track by track basis, didn't necessarily like mesh into my soul.
Because I was thinking about this because, you know, when I was looking back at the music that I've listened to this year, you know, people were playing around with that Spotify game. I don't really use Spotify that much, so it wasn't really a reflection of my music. But just if I had to guess, I'd say like two of my most listened to albums were the Lana Del Rey album and the Playboi Carti album, which I both I felt like just had a mood that I wanted to live in this year. So I listened to them all the way through many, many times. Yeah. And neither of those albums showed up on either of your lists. And I know that you're fans.
Yeah. JP and I talked about Lana.
Yeah, I was
before.
Curious.
Was Lana sort of on your short list?
Yeah, she was definitely on my short list, at least for a song.
Yeah.
And I probably regret that I didn't put her in my song
list.
Yeah,
I think she could have made, she was on my 40. Like, I think when I went back to it, there was enough kind of space between the good stuff on the Lana record that I didn't feel like I could do it for albums.
Right.
And I don't listen to her on a song base. Like, when I listen,
album artist.
Yeah. So I didn't necessarily consider her for the song list, but I did like her. And I actually, when I saw her live this year, it was the best time I'd ever seen her. Like, she seems to really be growing into her own. And Lana's a person, a performer who I have not always liked. Like, yeah. I really struggle with early Lana.
Yeah, no, I think her career arc, you know, has been one of the more fascinating in recent, like, pop memory. And I think sometimes people forget about sort of how far she's come and that she's just still continued to make, you know, more solid albums.
Okay, we're sorry, Lana.
Yeah, we are bad.
What about Playboi Carti, John? I was surprised that that didn't make your list.
Okay, so let's just have some real talk about Playboi Carti.
To me, it's a sound collage. It's
totally,
you know,
agree.
It's a full, it's like you just let it wash over you.
I 100% agree, but like I do not enjoy listening to Playboi Carti rap. I get it. I feel it. I like Woke Up Like This and I like, you know, like I like those records, but 12 of them, I struggle. And I sort of as a conceptual piece, I think that record's good.
Right.
But like,
if it was an instrumental album.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah, it kind
TBH.
Of is. Right.
Well, I mean, and this is the thing, like when I went back and actually reread the piece I wrote about the Carti and the 21 record, you know, that piece is very much about kind of like the deconstruction of flow and how these sort of like structural things in rap that used to matter a lot, like don't actually matter. And to be fair, like 21 is now starting to rap like more like a regular rapper. I don't think Carti ever will.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope. I mean, I don't think that he
I don't want him to. Yeah. No, and I'm not sure he's capable of it. But there is something where the sort of like essence of or ode to Carti is better than Carti. And so when I went back and listened to the Carti record, I was like, I can tune this out. And like, yes, could I have put Magnolia on my singles? Like, I probably could have. So my bad on that. But as an album, it's, you know, it's interesting because it's like it became sort of like an avantists album.
Right.
But I just never, I never totally bought into
it. Well, can we at least listen to a little of Magnolia?
Which song would you like to
I think
like
we should just play Magnolia because I feel like that when we, in a few years, when we think of, when we hear it, we'll think of 2017.
Absolutely.
In New York, I'm Millie Rock. Had it in my socks. Running from an op. And I shoot at op. And I'm on the block. What? And I'm on the block. In New York, I'm Millie Rock. Hiding in my sock, what? Hiding in my sock, what? Selling every rock, what? In New York, I'm in New York, hiding in my sock, what? Useless every rock, what? Running from the cop, what? Shooting at the ops, what?
Yo, Pierre, you wanna come what? Here?
Shooting at the ops, what? Cause I run that block, what? Give me top, top, in my drop, top. I didn't hug on flop, 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 when I drop, drop. Try to hug on flop, 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 when I drop, drop. Try to hug on flop, flop, flop.
Where were you when you first Millie rocked to Magnolia? Yeah, Playboi Carti again, but 20, you know, 21's average when I think about rappers who had an interesting year challenging long running prevailing norms about how rappers are supposed to rap, and not just the old norms of like New York rap and like structural integrity rap, but also kind of like post Future and post Young Thug. 21 actually had, like, I thought, a very interesting year. Here's a guy who, like, raps three words when he should be rapping four, and there's a lot of negative space in the songs. And to me, I was very struck at how effective that was, and also what a sort of, like, weird, sui generis year he's had independent of music.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously you're alluding to his relationship with Amber Rose, which is a beautiful thing, mm-hmm. depending on how much you want to engage with, mm-hmm. you know, fan fiction of rappers, which is, yeah.
Quite a lot.
But then on Without Warning, the mixtape he just put out with Offset, yep. like, he did become, like, a different sort of rapper, and I think because Offset is doing so much rapping and saying so many words. It's interesting to watch them play off of each other and 21 try yeah. out some new flows. And, you know, he's going places. I think he's not done evolving.
No, strong agree. Speaking of rapping a lot of words, JP, Kendrick Lamar.
The most words.
The most words.
Most
if there's
words?
A Grammy for most words.
But also the most different flows.
Yeah.
The most,
a lot of flows. Kendrick's on your list too.
Kendrick is like a deeply accomplished performer and rapper, like no knock on Kendrick.
And the most burdened guy.
Yeah
that was I mean
a lot on his mind.
Yeah, should we listen to Humble for a minute?
Sure.
Yeah, let's listen to Humble.
Nobody pray for me, it been a day for me. Yeah
Hey, I remember syrup sandwiches and crime allowances, finessing on them with with some counterfeits, but now I'm counting this. Parmesan with my accountant lips. In fact, I'm down in this. You say with my boo babe tastes like Kool-Aid for the analyst. Girl, I can buy a Westie World with my base stuff. I know that it's good. Won't you sit it on my taste buds? I get way too petty. Won't you let me do the extras? Pull up on your block and break it down. We playing Tetris. AM to the PM, PM to the AM phone. Eat up your per diem. You just gotta hate them phone. If I quit your BM.
So what I was really struck with on this Kendrick record is I never really thought of Kendrick before as someone who suffered in the limelight, because his particular type of limelight is so specific. It's almost so cloistered that you didn't necessarily feel like, oh, he's dealing with Drake problems. You know, he's dealing with Puff problems. He's dealing with Taylor problems. And maybe he's not dealing with those specific kinds of problems. But what really recurs throughout Damn is this kind of tug of war between public expectation, self-determination, religious commitment, all these things that don't necessarily easily reconcile. And we've heard Kendrick talk about them maybe separately before, but I think on this album, he's talking about them all kind of in competition for his attention.
And trauma, too.
Yeah.
A lot of trauma.
Yeah.
The sense of responsibility he's taken on as a hip-hop figure, you know, always addressing larger problems. I mean, I didn't like this one as much as the last one for the sort of stripped-down musical simplicity.
Yeah, I was going to say,
that's why it's low in my list.
Right. It's different to hear him struggle with those things, especially in terms of him being a public figure, over this sort of complex, like, avant jazz, you know, that we had on To Pimp a Butterfly.
Right. And then bring that back.
And then to hear him do the same thing, but on these hooks laden Mike Will beats and that kind of thing. It's like, it's a different, it's almost like a flex to just prove that he can do it either way. He can talk about difficult subjects on difficult beats, or he can talk about difficult subjects on the radio. And that, you know, as someone who hasn't always been the biggest Kendrick fan, like, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, there's hooks. Like, it's just not a thing I ever really expected Kendrick to do. And not because I didn't think he could, but because I just wasn't sure he was interested in it. And when he became so successful and so popular on To Pimp a Butterfly, which is like an extremely naughty and insular record, you think, well, if you're going to be popular off of those kind of songs, like, why would you ever make a song with Rihanna? And yet, made a song with Rihanna. It got bumped. Also, like, literally anytime you go to Los Angeles, it's actually really striking. I can't imagine New York radio supporting a New York rapper the way that Los Angeles radio supports Kendrick Lamar.
Well, Troy Ave got some radio play for quite a lot of years, given his talent
level. I literally cannot believe in the year of our Lord 2017 you are mentioning Troy Ave on the podcast.
I'm just saying, High 97 played a lot of Troy Ave.
Okay, but not quite on the level of Kendrick. Okay.
No, but Kendrick deserves to be played because the songs are good, is what I'm saying.
Sure. Troy had a couple good songs. Anyway.
It's true. LA radio loves Kendrick
Lamar. It's very striking. It's hard to drive around in LA for more than 10 minutes without hearing a Kendrick Lamar song or multiple Kendrick Lamar songs. But no, New York, despite what Joe just said.
Father, forgive me for mentioning Troy.
Oh, my God. You're going to have to sit out the next four podcasts. JP, let's talk about a record that's on your list that is not on my list, but I'm definitely interested in, which is Moses Sumney.
Moses Sumney is on my list because it's like a strange fever dream that I don't quite understand. It feels like all of the songs are about to melt or have melted and recongealed.
Mm-hmm.
It's really ambitious. His big concept is that binary love is, you know, boy and girl love is not the end all and be all, but it's also about melting down all these musical forms, and it's hard to make music that rambles as much as that does coherently. I mean, verse, chorus, verse, fine, you got your roadmap. But these songs are like into the trackless forest and out, but with an entire studio orchestra able to follow you down to the minutest footstep. So it's a dreamlike record, and I like it.
Can we play some of it?
Sure, and let's take the song called Quarrel.
Thank you. has much to give. I don't ask for much, just enough to live.
But I want to say, I mean, a lot of the albums I picked, I realized afterwards, are very much climbing into fetal position and waiting for the storm to blow over. And I noticed this after I did the list, that this was not a plan. I just think a lot of are looking inward and sort of trying to survive terrible times by examining yourself.
I would venture to say that of my top 10, at least 6 and as many as 8 fall into that category, the most obvious of which would be the Mount Eerie record. Another thing that I'm going to subject you guys to listening to just for a moment.
That's an extremely brave record and kind of harrowing. I was actually thinking about that for my list too, but I thought, how many times can I bear to listen to this?
Yeah, I mean, it's awful.
It's so brave.
It's very awful to listen to.
The backstory on that?
Mount Eerie is Phil Elverum. He makes very lo-fi music, and this is an album that's made sort of in the immediate aftermath of the death of his wife, who had been dying maybe over the course of a year. And this is just a tough record. This is a real, I've never listened to anything like this.
I haven't been able to get through it.
I remember when I wrote about it, part of what I ended up writing about was just how do you even assess this as art? And I know that that's like, it's almost trite to say, because like everybody processes their pain in a very different way. But oftentimes what art does is it gives you a framework to assess pain and it distances you from the pain a little bit. This record does nothing of that sort. There is no distance. Let's listen to Ravens.
October 2015, I was out in the yard. I'd just finished splitting up the scrap 2x4s into kindling. I glanced up at the half moon, pink chill refinery cloud light. Two big blackbirds flew over, their wings whooshing and low. But only two. Their black feathers tinted in the sunset. I knew these birds were omens, but of what I wasn't sure.
So I saw Mount Eerie perform songs from this record a couple months ago. And it was just very, very difficult. And again, I think the sort of the kind of parallel problem when talking about this record is you end up talking about his pain so much. And I don't want to diminish the art by only talking about the pain. And I don't want to say the art is purely a function of the pain, because here's a person who's clearly an accomplished artist. And I worry that in all the conversation around how much of a emotional and potentially logistical challenge the making of this record was, we lose a little bit of the, actually, this is just a very, very sharply written record. And it is a challenge to listen to, and that is part of its emotional effectiveness. But it is also a very good songwriter firing on all pistons, inspired by a terrible tragedy.
Well, I was at that show too, and as you remember, he was talking about performing it at Coachella or something.
Oh, I forget. Yeah, at some other festival. Yeah.
And so he's backstage and Skrillex is pounding away, you know, in the next tent. And the thought of this very private music out there as a performance, as a public thing in the middle of party people, he was well aware of how peculiar that situation was.
Shouts to our former colleague, Ben Ratliff, who thought a lot about listening And that record definitely engendered a different kind of listening. I find it sometimes very easy to listen to a record without listening because I listen to a lot of records. And so sometimes I'll be engaging with a record and even writing about a record and haven't necessarily heard it to the depth to which I was hearing this record. And so just even that I felt was an accomplishment to kind of like reframe the terms of consumption. Okay, let's lighten the mood a tiny bit. JP, both you and I had one reggaeton or post-reggaeton record, although they were different and very, very different performers and materially different music. So let's listen to something off the Residente album.
Let's lighten the mood. Apocalyptico.
Cuando se derrumba el paisaje y no haya pista para el aterrizaje y los milagros ya no salven gente porque los santos se tiraron de un puente. Cuando el clima pierde el control y se le queme la piel al sol. Cuando la arena se quede sola y el océano se ahogue con sus propias olas. Cuando se sacuda el suelo y las nubes se caigan del cielo y los árboles estén de rodillas con los troncos flacos enseñando las costillas. Cuando no queden rastros ni huellas y la luna se estrelle contra las estrellas y se rompa lo que ya estaba roto. Aquí estaremos nosotros.
太阳被自己淹没，云彩重重射落地面。当太阳把自己灼伤，当树木之徒出飞机，当树木之徒出飞机。 So Residente is from Calle Trece, or was.
Was.
Talk to me a little bit about this solo record.
It's definitely a concept album. He had his DNA tested, and then he went to all of the places his DNA came from. He's Puerto Rican, and he found that his DNA had stuff from China and stuff from the Middle East and stuff from Africa, and he went to generally war zones or near war zones or poverty zones. Apocalyptico, the one we just heard, is from Beijing, which he went to and got there in one of its apocalyptic pollution modes and started thinking about the end of the world. He went to all these places and collaborated with people, which is kind of a Paul Simon thing to do. But he did his best to go deep into whatever he was collaborating with. But it's still Residente. I mean, he's still completely hard-nosed. He's still unflinching. He's still a really good rhymer. I mean, I think even if you don't understand the Spanish, you just get the feel of apocalypse in this song.
Where do you feel like that album fell in the kind of broader Latin pop spectrum of this year?
Way off on the left somewhere.
Yeah, it does feel that way, right?
Yes. He's not leading a movement. He's following his own peculiar lights.
He's more of a veteran, right?
Yeah. But this isn't I'm headed for the top of the pops.
Right. Unlike my choice, which is Ozuna and his album Odyssea. Or Odyssey. I'm embarrassed to not know the pronunciation. But
Odyssey.
It's fire. It's fire.
There you go. Prowess got you.
What JP got. It's fire regardless of pronunciation. Ozuna is quite the opposite of that. He is almost, I would say, ruthlessly and sometimes mirthlessly targeted to the top of the charts. He has one of my favorite voices in all of pop music, regardless of genre. Probably my favorite voice in Latin music since Romeo. I like Ozuna because he's very versatile. I like that he sings and raps. I like that he raps regular and raps in a reggaeton style. But this album also, it says a lot about kind of the evolution of what's happening in mainstream Latin pop. You have the sort of post-reggaeton, the rise of Latin trap, the kind of the hybridization of bachata into reggaeton. These are things that are starting to collapse in a weird way, maybe kind of how country was sort of becoming a little style agnostic 5 to 7 years ago. You're starting to see that a little bit more in Latin music right now. And Ozuna to me is like the main guy, the axis around which a lot of this is spinning. Let's listen to a little bit of Tu Foto from Odisea.
Ni una llamada, como si nada de nada y no quieres saber de mí, que me perdonara. Yo pensaba que tú solamente eras para mí. Tengo tu foto pa' volverme loco, pensando en ti, solamente en ti, mi corazón roto. Tengo
repetimos, pero se me hace tan difícil encontrarte que tengo que conformarme.
There's one figure whose name doesn't appear on any of these lists, but who had a hand in a few of these albums, and that's Mr. Jack Antonoff.
Hey, future YouTube producer Jack Antonoff?
Yeah, it could happen.
Footnote to our previous podcast.
can I just briefly just do a quick sidebar?
You want
to
plug the YouTube podcast?
I do. Yo, so I've almost never gotten as many emails as I did about the YouTube podcast, specifically the connection between YouTube and Christian music. Apparently, we have a lot of ministers who listen to the podcast. We have worship leaders. We have ex-Christian rock band members. We've got scholars who study this stuff.
Wow.
Shouts to all of them. I got literally dozens of emails. There's something called the YouTucharist. Are you guys up on this?
No.
I was not up on this. So there apparently is a book about YouTube and the Christian impulse coming out next year, so we might revisit all this. But I want to shout out all the ministers and worship leaders who are podcast listeners who put me up on all this, and I have a lot of reading to do.
So when Jack Antonoff produces the Christian
U2
album, this will all come full circle.
I'm proud to have been a small part of it.
but John Perales, your number one album, St. Vincent, he produced the whole thing. Melodrama by Lord, which on both your lists, he produced most of that album, and then half of the Taylor Swift album, which also pops up.
Hey.
in all of this. So I wonder what you guys think about sort of his influence on the sound of this year and what he was able to get out of these songwriters that worked for you, even if you're not the biggest fan of his production necessarily.
Well, he listened to each of them. They're pretty different albums. I mean, the drums go boom on all of them. That's one thing he's really good at. But he didn't try to turn St. Vincent into a pop songwriter. He didn't try to turn Lord into a pop songwriter particularly. What he's really good at, to me, is the subterranean layer, the bass layer, the syncopated rumble underneath that makes you pay attention to what's going on above it. But St. Vincent seems to pretty much have had all of her own ideas. Lord sounds like Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't get in the way. He facilitates. I have the feeling that they booked him to do the thing they knew he could do. That's my take on it.
And I think the Taylor record's actually an interesting example where you can kind of tell what Jack's good at, because Jack's idea of bigness is very different from Max's idea of bigness.
Max Martin.
Yeah,
who
Max
did
Martin
the, other, produced, the rest of the Taylor
right, produced the rest of the record. So Max's idea of bigness starts with structure. It starts with a kind of like a technical precision that is then inflated. Jack's idea of bigness is, I think, JP, you're right about the subterranean thing, but Jack's idea of bigness is about mood and tone and looseness. And so I was never convinced that him and Taylor would be a good fit. That wasn't necessary, because Taylor is a very precise songwriter, but he's found something in Taylor or encouraged something in Taylor that's gotten her out of her comfort space. And I think the Jack records on the new album, on Reputation, are among some of the best.
Yeah, it's funny. I think of two songs I liked a lot this year as a fan. Again, I'm not a music critic.
We're just going to put that asterisk right there all the time.
But that I think of as like sister songs in some way are Supercut and Getaway Car. I think those like go really well together and they show sort of the best of everyone involved.
I would love to listen to Getaway Car, as I often do.
Bag and I stole the keys. That was the last time you ever saw me.
Driving the getaway car. We were flying, but we never get far. Don't pretend it's such a mystery. Think about the place where you first met me. Riding in a getaway car. There were sirens in the beat of your heart. Should've known I'd be the first to leave. Think about the place where you first met me.
Karen just whispered to me that she also listens to Getaway Car. That's a great example of old Taylor and new Taylor. So it turns out old Taylor is not dead.
Right.
She may not be able to come to the phone.
Combined with.
Yeah, she may not be free to talk. She may not be taking your call, but she's not dead. That's a great example of the balance of those two. And you know, I think this Taylor record caught a lot of flack. And I think I understand the narrative in which this Taylor record takes flack. It is not the first totally post-country Taylor record. It's probably the second totally. But it's the first one where she is not pretending like she's making a different kind of music than everybody else. It's the one where she's making the exact same kind of music with everybody else. And I think if you come into the room expecting something different, this comes from a left field perspective. But
so going directly into the most typical mainstream is a left field perspective.
For her. But she happens to be, but she
sends some skepticism for that argument.
She also happens to be really good at it. There are a number of exceptional songs on this record. And, you know, I was not totally sold on it in the beginning, and I saw it.
What percentage troll is it for you to put this on your best albums of the year list?
I'm going to put it on mine. I have not done mine yet, which is another reason I've been very quiet today.
In addition to the
what
laryngitis.
Percentage troll? Yeah. That's a totally fair question.
Yeah, you know. I know you're a provocateur sometimes.
I would say putting it as high as I did, I would say is 10 to 30%. But I genuinely like it better than the Aminé record.
Sure.
Or the Lorde record even.
Wow.
So I'm listening to it with Lorde more than any of the other pop albums that I was anticipating listening to a lot more this year, which included
your favorite album of the year.
My favorite album of the year, Lady Gaga's Joanne.
Your favorite album of the year to talk about.
It is my least favorite album of the year. Let's all just be clear. But the Kelly Clarkson record, the Pink record, the Katy Perry record, the Kesha record. I was expecting to have a list, my own list, stocked with these pop figures. Right. And I think the only one who's going to make it is Taylor.
Right. And Gaga came out last year, but bled into this year with the Super Bowl and all of that.
It bled.
So. I don't know her. Yeah. Like, so, but also, just to kind of answer your question about trolling, I think you're asking the wrong question. Isn't the real troll putting Hey Violet at number four
that was
immediately
another,
before Taylor?
That was another troll.
Isn't that the real troll? I would love to listen to some Hey Violet.
Which one?
Oh, my God. Let's just do the smash, Guys My Age.
I haven't seen my ex since we broke up. Probably cause he didn't wanna grow up. Now I'm out and wearing something low cut. About to get attention from a grown up. Cause you hold me like a woman. In a way I've never felt before. And it makes me wanna hold on. And it makes me wanna be.
Can I guess that you're the only person to put the Hey Violet album on their year-end list?
Certainly that I've seen. I'm also the only person to put Nothing Nowhere on their year-end list.
If there are any more, please hit us on Twitter or on the email. Other critics or publications have acknowledged these albums.
I just want to say for everybody who's going to put them on their year-end lists in 2018 and 2019, you're welcome.
Classic Caramonica.
I'm just saying, the Hey Violet record is a smanger. It's nothing but heat rocks. So y'all like pop punk, get involved. Y'all like mainstream pop, get involved. Y'all like Selena Gomez, get involved. Hey Violet's here for you.
I'll say that the Selena Gomez album that could have been if she didn't have her health issues this year is something that I'll look forward to next year.
Yeah. I thought about
putting some big singles.
I thought about putting Bad Liar on my singles list, which I did not. Oh, wait. Should we briefly talk about the record that we both did not put on our albums list that at least I kind of regret? Phoebe Bridgers.
Phoebe Bridgers. I was going to ask you guys about that as well.
Should we listen to Funeral?
Stranger in the Alps. Great debut.
Let's listen to Funeral for a minute. Thank you.
I'm singing at a funeral tomorrow for a kid a year older than me. And I've been talking to his dad. It makes me so sad when I think too much about it. I can't breathe. And I have this dream where I'm screaming underwater while my friends are waving from the shore. And I don't need you to tell me what that means. I don't believe in that stuff anymore. Jesus Christ, I'm so blue all the time, and that's just how I feel. Always have, and I always will. I always have, and always will. Talk until we think we might just kill ourselves, but then we laugh until it disappears. And last night I blacked out in my car, and I woke up in my childhood bed, wishing I was someone else, feeling sorry for myself when I remembered someone's kid is dead. Jesus Christ, I'm so blue all the time.
Another upbeat jam.
Yeah. So I was a little bit late past the Phoebe Bridgers record. And I think because of that, I sort of, when I was putting my list together, I didn't write about it. So I didn't have it on my long list. And I kind of only realized after the fact that I had overlooked it. I think this record's very good. It's very good. Hopefully this podcast will count in whatever accounting is being done of people who like the Phoebe Bridgers record. I think it's a very, very good record.
Really,
she's really sharp.
It's like sad and funny at the same time. Like her lyrics are just out of this world.
Okay, we're sorry, Phoebe.
Yeah, our bad.
Look, we can always add it, guys.
Karen, it's already been published. I can't knock down SOBRBE. I can't knock down Jadena.
Can I ask you guys about a few other omissions just quickly?
In.
I'm not even going to say Lil Uzi Vert. We'll just leave that for another time.
You had a whole podcast, Joe.
444, not on either of your albums lists.
Who?
He's
the Jay-Z
at the top
album,
of
444.
The top of the unranked John Perella song.
Yeah,
song
I put
list.
Jay-Z in my singles.
Yeah.
And he's number 16 on my list.
Okay.
He's on the long list.
He's on the long list. Okay, all right.
Yeah. That is a record that, depending on my mood, is either like incredibly fragile or incredibly strong. I kind of can't decide almost. And obviously, like, you don't want to overthink a record's intention. You want to just receive the record. But like, sometimes I'm like, this is half cooked. And sometimes I'm like, oh no, it's exactly as raw as it's supposed to be.
Right. I thought friend of the podcast, Rob Harvilla, wrote a good essay about
that.
This year.
Yes.
That I think gets at that.
I will say I would have loved to have seen Jay do that record in maybe a more intimate room than the room that I did see him do the record in.
Although I went when he played Barclays last week, and I had taken some space from the album and hadn't listened to it in a while, and it did bring me back to it and sort of cast some of those songs in a new light. I think, you know, this is seems out of nowhere, but like what you guys were saying about Mount Erie and him performing those songs, like...
There's
Jay obviously exists on a much different level, but I think him mining his
fire take.
Him mining his personal life in this way and then going to perform it around arenas.
Joe, that fire take just swept my flu right out of me.
Obviously what they went through is not the same, but I think that the way they, you know, tried to turn it into art and the fact that people have a hard time divorcing the subject from the music, you know, there's something similar in the digestion of these stories.
In a weird way, for me, the more successful version of 444 this year, for me, was the J. Cole record.
that's your problem.
I'm just being straight. You know, I am not ashamed to own, to stand in the light of my own truth.
I remember when you called me and you were like, oops, I like the J. Cole album.
It's like a day will live in infamy forever. But I feel like if a person evolves enough to make a piece of art that not only is sort of a strong standalone piece of art, but also something of a repudiation of the previous pieces of art that person's made, like, you should be enough of an adult to honor that. And here I stand, or sit, before you, an adult. TBD, kind of, to be fair. Could go either way. You want to talk about songs a little bit?
Sure.
Before we bounce?
My favorite overlap on your list this year, I'll say,
yeah,
Awful Things by Lil Peep.
What a song. What a great.
I almost thought, when I saw it on Paralysis List, I almost thought that it was a misprint and that they had taken John's singles list and printed it on
it's really
the
good
wrong
though, right?
John.
It's really good.
It's a really good song.
It's a
really
good
video.
Thank you for leading me to it.
And I think that we should just listen to it.
We should definitely
while we're
listen
here.
To it. So I went to Lil Peep's memorial service a few days ago, and they played at the memorial service Good Charlotte covering Awful Things. And what's really striking about Good Charlotte covering Awful Things, like, Good Charlotte's not a band I have a lot of time for necessarily, but he's very influential. And I would think if you are, like, say, 17 to 22 right now, like, Good Charlotte's kind of weirdly important.
Oh, yeah. Even too late for me, but
yeah.
But
definitely
I saw
younger
it.
Than you. Yeah, you see it happening. Awful Things, as it stands on the record, is, like, a powerful but, like, scarred and maybe, like, a little bit fragmented song. Good Charlotte just did it as, like, a straight, sad pop-punk rendition, and it was flames. And, like, it could be a top 10 record. And it probably could be a top 10 record in Lil Peep's version, but hearing it done that way, I was like, see, this is where it was going. I don't know what the Lil Peep, like, memorial culture is going to end up being like, but I would be very excited to hear an album of Lil Peep songs all delivered by famous pop-punk bands.
Not a bad idea.
I would love to hear that.
But wouldn't that be sort of going backwards from what he was doing?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It would be. I'm not saying that's all I want. I mean, like, I would like to hear more regular Lil Peep music, but just when I heard that, I was like, oh, I want one of those, like, punk goes pop or punk goes rap compilations, but, like, all punk goes Peep.
Yeah, and I think since his death, you know,
song title, album title.
Yeah. Free idea.
Yeah.
Go take that.
You know, since his death, we've thought a lot about sort of the wasted potential and, you know, what we're not going to get. And I think this song was really, like, that first step toward what you could imagine ultimately making it to pop radio, to Z100.
Yeah, I feel like I've talked about this a little bit on the podcast and certainly to anybody in my personal life who would listen. But
Karen's laughing through the laryngitis.
Yeah. But I don't know, JP. I don't know if you feel this way, JP. I certainly look at my job as, like, I don't want to say predictive in a literal sense, but, like, I feel like part of what I'm always trying to understand is kind of what the architecture of pop is going to feel like and sound like, and what it is in the moment, what it has been in the past, and what it will look like in the future. And when I saw 2018 and 2019, I very clearly saw Peep, or at minimum Peep approved ideas, at the center of potentially a pop punk resurgence, or potentially a pop emo resurgence, or an emo rap mainstream moment. I definitely felt like he was going to be a major artist playing big rooms and on Z100. And it's just, I have been struggling a little bit knowing that that has been yanked away.
Well, but it does bring us back a little bit to your number one album of the year, the Nothing Nowhere record, which uses a similar sort of architecture.
They are cut of similar cloth. I think Peep's influence points are more mainstream and more poppy than Joe, who is not you, Joe, Nothing Nowhere Joe. But it's clear that at least in the SoundCloud underground, it's clear that those ideas, those overlaps have been bubbling for a couple of years. And so I imagine they will find other ways to be expressed. Beavis and Butthead of SoundCloud, Smoke Perp and Lil Pump.
Speaking of SoundCloud.
Oh, man. Let's listen to Ski Mask by Smoke Perp.
Yeah, there's no one more barge like the heat. Hey, Rick, Owen Margella's on my feet. Hey, I got that green, cooking, he still got that heat. Hey, keep that 30 bottle on my waist. Okay, now I'm a nigga, shoot you in your face. All my niggas got lawyers, we beat that case.
We beat that case, yeah.
And I keep that K right by my waist.
Right by my waist, okay.
Pull up at your grill with a ski mask.
So here's like an honest take about what happened this year. The SoundCloud rap thing, I don't want to say it's over. I don't want to be too preliminary about it. But I do think there was like a weird fizzle that happened in the last 3 months.
Well, they all got snapped up by major labels.
Right. And then they put
projects
out. And
there's no next generation.
And like, I don't think the Lil Pump album is great. I don't think the Smoke Perp album is great. I think integrating them into mainstream rap is going to be more of a challenge than it seems. I think maybe when the producers of that scene, you know, your Ronnie J's or whoever, start to produce records that include mainstream rappers, that transition might be a little bit more seamless. But at the moment, it's not happening in an optimal way. And I remember, Karen, I was telling you a couple months ago, I wanted to write about all the albums of that class, like the Trippy and the Smoke, and I never got around to it. But I've been struggling with the albums. And so the songs that I gravitated to from the SoundCloud kids for this year are largely earlier iterations of that. Smoke Perp's Ski Mask record is I think, just pure punk fight music. It's like a hardcore record. And it's great. And I would love to see some more of that like transmitted into 2018.
But this is the standard pop process.
Yeah, where, of course. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's the early warning system followed by
sanding down the rough edges. There's a lot of mixed metaphors, but you know what I mean.
But also followed by the business snapping up everything and then waiting for the real long-term or deeper people to I mean, it's panning for gold.
Yes.
I mean, and most of it's going to go through the sieve.
Shouts to all you label signing B-minus SoundCloud rappers, we see you. We see what you're doing. We don't approve.
No, we approve. It's the process.
Yeah, it's the circle of life.
I don't approve.
JP, do you have a single you wanted to mention?
Well, it wasn't a single, but it's Pleasure, the Feist title song of her album, which was an album that for me was a really, really slow burn. But it took a while. At first, I was kind of put off by its lo-fi-ness.
Yeah, it's sparse, it's lo-fi, it's harsh in a lot of places.
But it's not that sparse. I mean, suddenly, like, you got the woodwind section sneaking in the last verse. But it took a while to grow on me, but I realized it's one of those things that deadlines can do to you sometimes. You know, I went back to it, and it had really resonated with me. And Pleasure is a song about really interrogating your own pleasure, trying to find pleasure. It's not a party song. And it's one of those things where it crept up on me, but then it stayed. So why don't we play Pleasure by Feist?
Get what I want, and still it's a mysterious thing that I want. So when I get it, it makes sense of a mysterious. Cause empty can fly on such a serious way. I and you are the same man, either fiction or dreaming. We know enough to admit, we know enough to admit.
in your pleasure.
Speaking of pleasure,
it's my pleasure,
I want to go out with a song that I took a lot of pleasure in this year. It's not my number one song, my number four song. And I know that there's an emergent tribe out there, and I see y'all on the internet. I see y'all coalescing.
Don't do this.
I'm doing it.
I know what you're doing. I'm leaving the room.
I want to say, I feel you, I hear you, and I see you to all my poothers out there.
Oh, God.
Karen speaks. We're all walking out, for the record. You can't see this.
Y'all
can
walk out to the soundtrack of John Caramonica's number four song of 2017, and that is Charlie Puth's Attention.
How many times has he made you put this song in a podcast this year?
It's too fire.
God, I hear the marching troll feet. Armies of trolling.
John just hurt our producer.
I know that dress is karma, perfume regret. You got me thinking about when you were mine. And now I'm all upon you, what you expect. But you're not coming home with me tonight. You just want attention. You don't want my heart. Maybe you just hate the thought of me with someone new. Yeah, you just want attention. I knew from the start. You're just making sure I'm never getting over you. Oh.
Thank you for crying with us on the New York Times podcast this week and for listening to us talking about our best albums and best songs of 2017. We will be back in coming weeks with various other year-end content. You know we are coming with that fire content for the conclusion of a traumatic year. You can listen to every podcast ever. Not all of them are this upsetting at nytimes.com/podcast. You can email us, even the people who are ministers and worship leaders who emailed us last week.
Even if you like Charlie Puth.
Even if you like Charlie Puth. I want to hear from all my Puthers out there. I want to hear from Puth Gang. Whole lot of Puth Gang stuff going on. I want to hear from y'all at podcast@nytimes.com. And another reason to email us would be, I think we are going to do a year-end reader question podcast like we did a few months ago. There's a lot of stuff that's happened this year. If you want to talk about streaming or country gentlemen or viral rap breakthroughs or really anything that happened in 2017, I think we are going to take some questions in a subsequent podcast. So drop us an email also at podcast@nytimes.com. You could subscribe to the podcast anywhere you get that good, good audio content. I'm talking Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio app, Spotify, just wherever it's at, that's where we're at. Our producer, who loves Charlie Puth, is Pedro Rosado of Head Stepper Media. It's true. I said it, therefore it's true. We're going to be back next week.
What you expect, but you're not coming home with me tonight.